Today, Monday the 20th of July 2009, is the 40th anniversary of a very special event. An historic event that resonated the world over, whilst billions of people watched on television or listened to the radio with bated breath and much anticipation, including the Pope of the time. Veronica Scaresbrick tells us more.
It was the 20th of July 1969 when Pope Paul VI sent a radio message hurtling through space across a 250,000-mile void to the men who had just fulfilled an ancient human dream, that of walking on the moon.
Pope Paul VI is speaking to you, astronauts. Honor, greetings and blessing to you, conquerors of the moon.
For Pope Paul VI, the moonwalk was a recognition of the greatness of God's handiwork. The moon itself, he personified poetically as the pale lamp of our nights.
Pale lamp of our nights and our dreams, bring to her with your living presence the voice of the Spirit.
As the tiny lunar module neared the surface of the moon, scouring the landscape for a safe stretch to touch down on, all over the world, people scoured the fuzzy images from space on their television screens, anxious to see what would happen. Pope Paul was no exception. He too watched the landing from his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, which houses the Vatican Observatory. And as Neil Armstrong stepped down on the powdery surface of the moon, Pope Paul VI clapped his hands and said,
"We are close to you with our good wishes and with our prayers, together with the whole Catholic Church."
Often caught peering at lunar landscapes through the telescope at the Vatican Observatory, Paul VI had always shown a special interest in space travel. In the very first speech of his pontificate, he said that with the blessing of God, it had opened up a new era for humanity. And on a later occasion, he had given an astronaut a specially engraved bronze plaque to be laid on the surface of the moon with the words from a psalm, "O Lord our God, how great your name throughout the earth." In return, he got a piece of the moon, which today is still kept at Castel Gandolfo.
I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
And the relationship between the Vatican and astronomers goes a long way back in time. Vatican astronomer, Jesuit brother Guy Consolmagno traces the history of the Vatican Observatory, one of the oldest astronomical research institutions in the world.
Well, the Vatican Observatory likes to trace itself back to the reform of the calendar in 1582. In some ways, we're even older than that, because astronomy was one of the subjects that they taught in the medieval universities. But more specifically, as a current institute of the Vatican City-State, we date from 1891. And our first position was in the Tower of the Winds and on the walls of the Vatican itself. Then in the 1930s, we moved out to Castel Gandolfo and put some telescopes on the roof of the Pope's summer home and had some offices in the summer palace. Then in the 1980s, we built a new telescope in southern Arizona, and some of our staff moved out there. This year, in order to have more room for the observatory and more freedom to be able to do what we need to do during the summer months when the Pope is also trying to use the summer palace for his work, we've separated ourselves and moved the quarters of the Jesuits and the staff offices to a completely refurbished convent in the Papal Gardens. We still have access to the telescopes that are on top of the roof, though, and we can still use them both for scientific purposes and for educational purposes.
As Brother Guy was mentioning, the observatory has just recently moved. And really, the astronomers can almost be described as camping in the Pope's summer garden.
Oh, and it's a wonderful camp out. The building has been completely rebuilt from the inside, wired for the internet age, wonderful electrical outlets. Now they're all the same kind of outlets, unlike a building that had been sort of built on over 50, 75 years, in fact. And I'm delighted I have a new air-conditioned lab where I can work on my meteorite collection. We've got our library now all in one place, where before it was scattered over various floors of the Papal Palace.
And although Brother Guy plays it down a little, a very rich library that is indeed.
Well, we don't have any really valuable first editions, just second editions. We've got a second edition of Newton's Principia, and a second, or actually a third edition of Copernicus's De Revolutionis, the book about how the planets go around the sun. We've also got collections of scientific journals going back to the 17th century, a complete run of the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society of London, for instance, with papers by Isaac Newton in them.
Brother Guy is also in charge of the Vatican Observatory's unique meteorite collection.
It's wonderful. I joke with my fellow astronomers that they think they're studying stars and planets, but all they really get to study are light from stars and planets, the things they can collect with their telescopes. But me, I've got actual pieces of outer space that have come from the asteroid belt, or in a couple of cases, pieces that have been chipped off of the moon and even off of planet Mars. And I can bring these into the lab and poke them and prod them and find out how they've been put together and what things they've seen in the 4.5 billion years that they've been floating around the solar system.
Pieces that have been shipped off the moon. That takes us straight back to where we started, the moon landing on the 20th of July, 1969.
I'm going to step off the lander. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I was in high school when that happened, so it does make me feel a little ancient now.
Neil Armstrong, 38-year-old American, standing on the surface of the moon.
It was midnight in Michigan, and I remember watching the television set and recording it on a little tape recorder so that I, for a long time, had the entire sequence memorized, drifting to the right a little bit. And, the light coming on and just...
They've got the flag up now, and you can see the stars and stripes on the lunar
surface.
Are you getting a TV picture now, Houston? Neil, yes, we are getting a TV picture. You're in our field of view now.
I'd like to evaluate the various paces that a person can traveling on the lunar surface. You do have to be... rather careful to keep track of where your center of mass is. Sometimes it takes about 2 or 3 paces to make sure that you've got your feet underneath you.
I remember it extremely well, and especially associated with this place.
Jesuit Father Christopher Corbelli oversees the Vatican Observatory's research group in Tucson, Arizona. But thinking back, he says, he was right here in Rome on that historic date.
Because 1969 in the summer was my first visit to the Specula Vaticana, or the Vatican Observatory, and during the month that I was here, so the moon landing took place. So it was wonderful excitement. I remember very distinctly Pope Paul VI giving a broadcast in the dome of the Schmidt telescope about the significance and the wonder of this, humankind's first landing and first setting foot on the moon. And then he came out on the terrace that was in between actually the two domes there to thank the people who had made the broadcast possible, so the technicians and the producers and everything else, and I was out there as well, so joined the line of people being presented to Pope Paul VI, and that was my first meeting with a pope.
Father Corbelli remembers the moonwalk coincided with his first meeting with a pope. To Brother Consolmagno, it also brings back the memories of a time during which the American people had a deep need for positive heroes and hope.
It was the summer between my junior and senior year, and I had become sort of cynical about the world, but that brought me back. It was the time of Vietnam, it was the time of student riots, it was a very unsettled time in many parts of the world. I know that there were terrible things happening in Great Britain and Northern Ireland in that year. And yet, this was something that reminded us that the world was bigger than whatever crisis seemed to be going on the daily news. And indeed, reading history now, we remember Galileo. We remember that Galileo got in trouble with the Pope. Does anybody remember the name of the Pope? We remember Galileo's crisis occurred during the Thirty Years' War. Does anybody remember what that war was about, who was fighting it? In the same way, in 1969 in America, the Vietnam War was everything. 100 years from now, no one will remember the Vietnam War, but they'll remember people landing on the moon.
So the Vatican Observatory is, in Brother Guy's words, camping out in the Pope's summer gardens. But it branches out afar, and who better to tell us more about that than its supervisor in Arizona, Father Christopher Corbelli.
Well, it's called the Vatican Observatory Research Group. It's a place where we can have great access to observing. It's now that the observing in Castel Gandolfo has been diminished considerably by the amount of light that everyone naturally living around is putting up in the sky, it makes our telescopes not so efficient. So to find the efficient telescopes, we go to the good dark skies and deserts of southwestern United States, and that's Arizona, so a great center of astronomy.
And what exactly, Father Corbelli, is your area of expertise?
I study stars, surprisingly, because there are all kinds of other things in the universe to study, and you might study planets or the little guys that our brother Guy Consolmagno studies, the meteorites. I study stars, and particularly through their spectra or their rainbows, because it tells me so much about them and their personalities.
Personalities of stars?
Oh, sure. Now, just with people, you can take a group of people, and if you look at them from a distance, you can sort of say, well, you know, sort out their heights maybe, and you know, their sizes. But then the closer you get, the more you realize that each one's an individual. So there's the same with stars. You can either look at them at, as it were, a certain distance and sort them out into types and categories, or you can look at their details and find out how one stars of a particular type will vary a little bit one from the other, and then you start asking the questions. Why?
And answers, he says, can be very slow in coming. But, he points out, there have been some real changes in our understanding of the universe, and it's difficult to pinpoint a single great achievement that is more important than others.
I can't say there's any one achievement. There have been so many. A delight in these days of the reunion of our former students, now alumni of our summer schools, is the perspective that they have on the what's been happening since the time that our schools first began. So 1986 was the first of the summer schools. There have been quite real changes in our understanding of the universe. Our galaxy was quite a different place. It wasn't totally static, but it didn't have all the incredible encounters that we now know about that has built up the population of stars in our own galaxy. So our picture has been changing, and it's been wonderful through the reviews that these alumni have been giving to realize that.
You may be wondering what Father Corbelli is talking about when mentioning the summer school at the Vatican Observatory and the presence of alumni. Brother Consolmagno explains exactly what that is all about.
This is an interesting year for the Vatican Observatory in a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. It's the International Year of Astronomy. It's the 400th anniversary of the year when Galileo first pointed his telescope to the skies and saw what the universe looked like through a telescope. So all over the world, people are doing special astronomical events. In addition, though we normally would have had a summer school this year because we tend to have them every 2 years, this is the year that the Vatican Observatory has moved into new quarters. And we knew we weren't going to be ready in time to host a summer school. So we realized this was the perfect time to bring together alumni from our old schools to have a super summer school. We've done this twice before, so this is our third super summer school. And the theme around which the school has been organized is seeing astronomy as a common ground where the entire world can get together and enjoy the universe together.
That sounds lovely. But what does it mean in practical terms?
Well, part of it is just inspired by the fact that here at the school we have the entire world. Our schools have had students from more than 50 nations attend over the years. The organization of this school is by two women, both named Marina, one from Slovakia, one from Argentina, and they've gathered together people from almost every continent to talk about how astronomy has affected their culture, how they are interacting as astronomers with their culture, and then how we can carry this further to recognize astronomy as, you know, well, to put it most simply, we're all in the same universe. We're all under the same sky. We're all made out of the same stardust.
We're all made out of the same stardust. I'm no astronomer, that's for sure, but I can certainly relate to that. What's more, I had never thought of astronomy as a lesson in human equality. But next time I lie down on my back for some stargazing, I'll do it with a new perspective in mind, and remember that astronomy is not just probing black holes or analysing meteorites. It's actually a common ground where the entire world can get together and enjoy the universe together. Actually, Pope Benedict has said that much better than me, as he greeted those marking this 2009 anniversary of Galileo's first telescopic explorations and UNESCO's World Year of Astronomy. On this past winter solstice, Benedict himself pointed out that understanding the laws of nature can stimulate understanding and appreciation of the Lord's works.
If the heavens are telling the glory of God, the laws of nature, which over the course of centuries, many men and women of science have enabled us to understand better, are a great incentive to contemplate the works of the Lord with gratitude.
Thanks to Ema McCarthy there for conducting those interviews with Brother Guy Consolmagno and with Father Christopher Corbelli.